stable of Silas Wood Park in there. He burned his name at the day that it was built. And I decided that I put it through that in the attic part, and so I sealed up. But they'll find that in the Christian world, the Bell House, different buildings he built.
Yeah. But it doesn't look like they're going to be demolished too soon anyway.
No.
It looks like they're in pretty good, under good care. How did you meet your husband? He was lived in Japan and was educated in England.
Yes. Well, he said that he came over in 1914. He was in England. And he had a cousin living here. And his cousin said that England was very cold and foggy and all of that. So he said that you should come to Southern California where I live. He said, we have beautiful weather all year round. And talked so praising of California weather that he said he was just so interested and he wanted to come. And he made arrangements. And in 1914, that's when the First World War broke out. He said the night that he was to board the ship to come to Philadelphia, he said the newspaper boys were signing this extra Germany declares war on America, whether by law or Germany. And anyway, he said a lot of people canceled their reservations. But he was with a brother of his cousin who lived in Pasadena. And the brother says, so, well, if the ship's going to sail, let's take a chance. And the ship said that they were going to definitely sail on schedule. So he said they boarded and took a chance. And they arrived in Philadelphia so many hours ahead of schedule because they had to speed. They thought that they saw torpedoes, but I guess they weren't. And by the night, the hours pulled a dark curtain over the port holes and they tried to keep it as dark as possible. And so he came to Philadelphia and then took the long train ride across the continent and he came. And like I said, he was trained to be a teacher in Japan. So he started Japanese school, first Japanese school in Pasadena. And I can't remember, I must have been about 17 or 18. I was going to high school. But my brothers were all small. And my mother said, well, wonderful. I would like the boys to learn something about Japan. And at that time, it wasn't racist or anything, but we used to hear people say, Japan's such a small country, and whatever they make is awful poor, you know. And they downplayed everything Japanese. And my mother said, well, I hate to argue, but it's not so. I'm proud of being Japanese. She wanted her boys to know some of the good parts of Japan and have a little understanding of the language. So she sent all my brothers. And then sometimes my mother would fix a very nice dinner and invite the school teacher. And that's how we met. And then when I finished high school and started to work, by then my husband asked my folks why we call it a go-between idea. Had a friend, mutual friend, ask whether I thought he could marry me. And that's how the arrangement was made. And I was working in a Japanese bank at the time. I wanted to finish college, but my father believed that women who had too much education had a hard time finding a husband. They didn't want people who knew more than they did or had a higher degree in education. So he says, with a few men, I don't think you're going to be able to find a husband if you go to college. So you're a college graduate. So he says, you have enough schooling. And our minister, Reverend Fritchie, he's a Christian minister, and he said that he knew people in the bank, and he highly recommended me for the position as secretary. So that's how I took this job at the bank. It was on 1st and Main Street. Of course, it's no bank. It's all changed now. But I worked there for a year, and in the meantime, my husband went to Japan to check up on my family background, because they're very, very suspicious of people in America. They don't know what, under what conditions they were immigrants or what kind of people were here. So he went to Japan, stayed for a whole year to check up. And my parents came from the peninsula, they call the Izu Peninsula. It's right near Tokyo. It's a beautiful place. I went there in 1766. But it has a mild climate. It's a tea-producing section. And they also have an oriental orange. They call it random oranges. It just grows. It's a nice warm climate. He went there with his brother. Inquired at the city hall, inquired at the different homes, and looked up all kinds of records in the city hall. Now, about 6 years ago, my parents were farmers. My parents' parents were farmers and landowners. And there was no record of insanity or criminal record or anything. So, he came back and they decided to get married. So I was still working at the bank when he got the position of school teacher here.
In Washington?
Yes.
And the school was already there when he came? He didn't start it like he did the one in Pasadena?
No, it was already there. Uh-huh. Sam, who had it before us, I forgot what his name was. But he and his wife, they took a job in Santa Ana. And there were a lot of pepper and pimento growers in Santa Ana. And he said that they needed a combination of clerk, secretary, executive association, and a school teacher. And he said he knew a lot of friends there. So he decided he'd like to go there. And talked about how he was doing his job.
Could I get you to tell again what Long Beach
looked
like when you first came?
Well, when we first came here, I used to go to the Long Beach store, Buffon.
Yes.
Well, Buffon store was the only big store, and it was at the same location as now. But I remember it might have been at my University of Texas grad school. There was the main floor and a wide staircase that went straight up. And at the top was Mr. Charles E. Buffon's office. And he was the mayor of the town at that time. And so we had to go and pay our respects to the mayor. And then he told us about the Chamber of Commerce. The head of the Chamber of Commerce at that time was Mr. Henderson. And then there were a few stores on Pine Avenue, but they were not too many, and it just came up to 6th Street. And later on the corner of 6th and Pine, it was the famous department store. It's called the famous. It changed its name a couple of times. At that time, it was called the Army and Navy Surplus Store. But that was the end of the development. From then on up, it was vacant lots, maybe a house here and there. But I remember at the corner of 101 Highway and Long Beach Boulevard. We had ditches on both sides, and they didn't have these ponds, places to keep off the black oil. And that sump oil would just be running down the gutters. It was just an awful mess. And I remember the fire department, the ivy-covered this building, somewhere on 3rd Street. But,
And you said you were in East Anaheim?
Anaheim Street, yes. A lot of wood buildings, one-story wooden buildings. There were all kinds of shops on Anaheim Street. So for the quick shopping, we always went down to Anaheim Street. They had the Dale Theater, and they had the bank, and they had grocery stores, the hardware stores, every kind of business you could think of. But it was a very flourishing part of the city when oil was discovered here, because that's where the people hung out, saloons, different things.
Yes, that's very interesting.
But I just like them with about the town. And then the Pike was a very popular place. Yes, and they had the pier that in later years was torn down.
Could you tell in a little more detail what the Japanese people, what kind of stores they had on the Pike?
They were vegetable places. In the first place, it did have a capital. And they weren't trained in anything in the business line. I think they were mostly office workers in Japan who came here. And I think one reason they were able to come was because they had an education and they weren't so much, they weren't so eager to get the labor, like up in San Francisco when they were building the railroads and things like that. You know, they invited a lot of laborers to come in to do the menial work. But these men just applied because they wanted to make a fortune in America and see what the new country world was like. And everybody talked about America. So they wanted to come, and I think one of the requirements was a high school education. So that's how they had them to come. I remember the girl, we were one of the few families who had a mother and a father. All the other men were well-educated men, but they were single men. One was a Christian minister, and the others were businessmen in Los Angeles. They had grocery stores, or they had art goods stores. And some worked in American families as butlers or cooks. And they were hungry for Japanese food and to speak the language and to reminisce. We liked to hear each other's stories. And my father, when he was a young man, they had several boy babies in the family. But every time they had a boy baby, he would die. I guess they didn't know how to take care of the mothers. You know, they didn't receive prenatal care or anything, but they all died. And when my father was born, my mother said, oh, I guess we're going to lose him sooner or later. But fortunately, he survived. And by that time, his father was gone. But the mother was left a plot of land. And had farmers raise cotton there. That was also on this peninsula. He's a peninsula where it's born. And he said that he was supposed to go to school, but he didn't care to go to school. And instead he'd take this big basket he was supposed to fill with cotton, and he'd just go down and fish, and have a good time, come back when he saw the other school children come back. But he had one basket filled with cotton to make, his mother. But later on, he craved to learn more about the outside world. So then he went to the temple. My grandmother, I guess, sent him to the temple so that he could learn to be near some men where he missed his father. She thought that he should have a male supervisor. And the priest, she talked to the priest, he took over and had my father very well disciplined, taught him different things, history and all. The more he learned about history, he wanted to travel. And he was a very big boy for his age. And he lied his age. He went to Yokosuka, which is used for a naval base and shipbuilding. And he watched the carpenters, and he got himself hired as an apprentice. And they taught him about shipbuilding. I think that's how he learned how to make ships in Mr. Marsh. But anyway, he learned shipbuilding. And then he said that one day a British ship came in. And he said he put that ship over from stem to stern and admired the soul and admired the officers and the language they spoke. He said, that's what I want to learn, is a foreign language. saw his went to the captain and had some sign language and what he learned from books. He told him he wanted to work for them, and they took him off. And I haven't seen it, but my brother said after my father passed away, he said, "Do you know that Papa had a honorable discharge from the British Navy?" I said, "What?" He said he found it paper. Anyway, he went on as a carpenter and traveled the world. And of course, he went to India and Africa and all those places. So he had lots of wonderful memories. And he really should have written a book, I guess. So then on Saturday nights, he used to tell all of his friends, "Come on over and have dinner." And they would come, and he says, "My mother just loved to cook, and they enjoyed it because it reminded them of home." So they would eat and enjoy their hot tea, and then my father would tell them about what Africa's like, what Singapore's like, what England's like, and France. He'd gone to Montreal, France, and they were so fascinated by the stories he told. And he's an artist also, so he would sketch him with a pencil. And every time we'd buy meat, my mother used to just take a towel and wipe off the blood spots, you know, and iron it out with her hands. She'd have all these meat papers, very thrifty. She'd have to save up. And then she'd give them to my father, and he'd sketch the different animals, the landscape, the odd-shaped mountains or cliffs or whatever seemed to be of interest. And he said, "These men would sit, you know, then they'd be sitting their tea and listening. Before they know it, it'd be 12 o'clock. And so he said, "It's too late to go home, too dangerous," he'd say. And then my mother made these old-fashioned quilts. They use them a lot in Japan. They're thick. They make them with foam rubber now. But years ago, they used to make them with cotton feel, just like a mattress. And she'd give those to the men and the blankets and all. And about, there would be about four or five men, sometimes as much as many as six, stay over in the living, sleep in the living room. And then next morning, she said, "Be up early in the morning, so he'd be outside brushing his teeth and out, way out in the back, where we would draw water to feed the chickens and all, and be outside brushing his teeth. Some would start sweeping the backyard, some would start raking and digging holes and burying the leaves, and some would start sprinkling. So they all make use of the stay. Then about 7:30, she'd have breakfast ready, and all come in and say what a nice pet had last night, how well they slept, and they'd enjoy their breakfast. And then the whole Sunday was spent talking and eating again. Then they would go home early Sunday because of Monday's work. But she had so many friends, and I remember my childhood was very happy because these men thought that they had to do something to show their gratitude. And they never came empty-handed. It was always a bag of candy or something nice. And I kept looking forward to think, "I wonder what he's going to bring me this time." Or a doll or something. They had such cute dolls, you know, they imported from Germany. They were maybe China with real hair. They could go to sleep, and their arms make good moves. And I just love those dolls. So I look forward to the men coming. And then in the summertime, my father would, I guess you'd call it the twine, heavy cord. We think it's something new now, but the native people always knew how to tie knots and make fishnets. It just macrame, now that I think of it. They'd make these hammocks. And, my father, after my mother and I came, about a year and a half later, my brother was born. And my father said he just lost his son, born in a vendor old hot shack. He wanted him to be born in his own home. So he bought the piece of property at George Buster, because he bought 229 for only $350. Two school teachers, sisters, they were retired, very, very elderly. They couldn't handle it, they didn't want it anymore. So they gave it to, sold it to my father very cheaply. So he bought it, and the lumber company would advance him $70 worth of lumber, just enough that he could work with. After work, while he would use my uncle, who was about 16 or 17 then, to help him. And he built his house just the outside frame, and that's where my brother was born. And little by little, he partitioned off the living room, dining room, and so forth. And he left the dining room and living room like it's one big room, but it had a piece across the top, and we drew a velvet curtain across. Like a banquet hall. So there was plenty of room for these men to fix their beds and sleep. So Sunday was the same thing. And every Sunday, Saturday, Sunday, we had company. So like I said, I enjoyed the child. And Christmas was a happy day. My mother liked American holidays. At first she said she felt very homesick and lonesome. But as these men came and told us their experiences, how long they had been here, and how it took them so long to get accustomed to the country. But he said, Mrs. Kawai, the longer you live here, you're going to like it. The weather is beautiful. There's plenty of fresh fruit and vegetables, and grows everything here. And she found everything they said was true. So she learned to like it very much. And my father was very fortunate to get to have these special jobs. So comfortable as children. My brothers were all sent to college and got a good education.
Okay, I'm still worried about the Japanese people on the pike. Okay. You said they sold vegetables, but I sort of think of the pike as an amusement.
No, they didn't sell vegetables. The vegetables were on Broadway, 4th Street, and along Pine Avenue.
Oh, okay.
That's where the markets were, and they just had the vegetable section. But on the pike, we had a man named Mr. Cesar, quite a famous landscape painter. He originally came from Seattle, Washington, and his two sons now had their own gallery in Double Hills. And Mr. Sarazara had a studio on the pike, and Mr. O'Connell, his son, one of his sons, minister just retired, and the other one was the orange shop. And I was just with the lady whose husband had the orange shop yesterday. And she said the pike is such a rough place. She said it's just... Well, sorry to keep the shop open at Friday night, Sunday, closed. And everything to North Hollywood. Mr. Okoshi's brother had a shop up there. And so then Mr. Okoshi passed away, but his son runs the shop up there. So those are the three. I think there was one eating place. I'm not sure, but there was an eating place, a restaurant, a fast food restaurant, like sandwiches. But we had mostly all farmers here.
And the people that lived on along Paris Road were also farmers?
Oh, they're all farmers, yes.
And did any of them own the land, or did they lease?
No, they all leased. They couldn't own land in those days.
Okay, I have to do my homework about that. I realize that there's a problem.
Yeah. But they leased their land. And we still have one family, the Maroka family, whose folks farmed out on Paris Road. John comes to my church our church, and Martha, his sister. I don't know where the other people went. I know one family moved out to the Lake Minister, and they raised strawberries there.
Yeah, I guess I might as well just ask you about this. I'm confused because on the one hand, I know there were laws against Japanese people owning land, but on the other hand, your father...
My father owned land, but that was before this new alien law came into effect. So, that was in 1904 when my father bought the land. And after that, I can't remember what year it was, but they made what they called the alien land. And after that, no one could buy. And then, about 1920, they couldn't even lease. So they couldn't lease land, but they could work under an American leaseor. So the farmers who worked on Mr. Bixby's ranch, they worked under Mr. Hall. I forgot what his first name was. He's passed on, of course, he and his family, but Mr. Hall lived on Loma Avenue, somewhere downtown. And he wasn't so much interested in agriculture for himself, but when he found that the Japanese people could lease under leaseor, he was very a sensitive man and a kind man, and he thought that he would like to be of help, and that's why he leased the land, and his men worked under him. And so that's how he was able to work. And Mr. Bixby was an understanding man, too. He liked the men because they were very industrious, and they kept the place clean. And he was, I think Fred Bixby was our Secretary of Agriculture for a while, and he was interested in a lot of the methods that they used. So I think we worked out together for.
Yeah, I know he was interested in that. One of the things that I wondered about, or I heard a little bit about, I wonder what happened to the property of the Japanese people who lived on the Bixby Ranch when they were sent off to camp.
Well, that was Mr. Bixby's land anyway.
Yeah, but apparently he tried to take care of the property that they left.
Yes, I don't know. I know at one time I heard that the taxes were very high, and the county wanted to levy a very heavy tax on the property, and he said that he made an agreement whereby allowing them to put a road through. I don't know which one of these is 7th Street or... Anyway, the road was one main road to go clear through, and he allowed the county state to put this road through, and in the bargaining, they were to release him of all taxes on his property. And then it was, go to the state for the state college, I believe. I'm not too familiar with the details of that, but the state college is on the grounds now. And then their home is still there, and it's sort of a historical museum. It houses a lot of their personal things and books and things like that. And the caretakers, one of the Mexican ladies who used to work for them. They had that old banana or banyan tree with big roots. I remember one of our girls who lived on Paris Road, Sheba girl. Their parents moved out to Westminster and they bought property. And by this time, American-born children, a new law was made. American-born children were American citizens, thereby they were eligible to buy land. So they bought strawberry land in their children's name. And Yankee's daughter, I think when she she was married and she was expecting her baby, her husband had to rush her to the side hospital, I guess. It was Morrow Hospital, used to be called Seaside Hospital over here. And they were halfway over, or not halfway, less than halfway, they were by the Bixby home. And since she knew Mrs. Bixby, she ran up there, and Mrs. Bixby called the doctor, and by telephone, they found out what to do for her, and she had a baby there at the Bixby home. She was telling me about it, and we laughed one day. But it's interesting to kind of go back and reminisce.
Yes, I have to do my homework and figure out all that stuff so that when I talk to you again, I'll have my facts straight. What happened after you went into the grocery business? The crash came.
Yes, in 1972, all the crash came, but we continued on.
Yeah.
But like I said, in 1930, my little boy was killed, and then my husband got over his cold, and he was so depressed, but he kept working, plugging along. Then in 1933, he had this awful earthquake, and the brick fell on his shoulder, collapsed his lung. So one had missed his head. And then he was placed in the hospital. He was sick ever since that time. He never did recover because in his weakened condition, it caused him to get pneumonia that turned into tuberculosis. And they said to send him to some sanitarium. But I couldn't afford it. And we felt that the doctor said by taking care of everything, boiling his utensils and all, it'd be safe to have him at home in a room by himself. So he stayed at home, but I was the breadwinner after that. And we managed until the war broke out. And then
what happened
to everything up.
What happened to the store? Did you rebuild it after the earthquake, or?
No, the contract released from Mr. Cook. K-O-C-H, Mr. Cook, and he decided to sell. And by that time, my brothers were discouraged too. Things weren't going too well. They were starting to build this real big supermarket. And then we also had a liquor store that faced Alamitos, but we never served liquor. It's just, well, you had to take it off the premises, you know. And when we had liquor licenses, how to get was expensive. And kept the liquor license. My brothers did because I was too busy with the home. And later he sold that. But the grocery store belonged to Mr. Cook. Of course, I don't know how they got rid of it, sold all the merchandise.
So what did you do as the breadwinner? You said you became the
breadwinner. Oh, I was a bookkeeper by trade. So I majored in business administration at school. So I kept books for the French hand bonding on 1434 Uganda Avenue, just inside of 101 Highway. For Mr. Morita, I was there a long time. And then after he came back, I took over again. I worked after the war. And then my husband passed away, and Saturdays I was there all alone. And it was just kind of a sad thing. I used to think about different things that made me just too unhappy. And someone said, why don't you come and work with us in a garment factory in Los Angeles? I'd never done power machine sewing, but they said it's fun and I will teach you. So I went along with my friends and I sewed a little bit. But then I tired of that and then I started working in the office again. But then by that time my children were in school and I had to keep house for my two younger boys because they were at the age where they were going to Poly High, and they said they were going to mischief, and the older boys said that they could keep up the house, that I didn't have to go out. And I was thankful because so many boys were getting into bad company, and my two younger boys were young teenagers. But they were very studious, and they received good grades, and they both went into dentistry. So the son I live with here, my youngest son, he's an orthodontist, and the other boy above him, Richard, he's a dentist in Harbor City. And then my daughter, I sent her away to school when we were in camp. We didn't have school for a long time, and they were just going around in groups. I didn't think it was healthy for them, and it was a constant worry for me. So I knew this professor of Latin American history who lived in Ohio, Worcester, Ohio. It's a Presbyterian-related college, and we're Presbyterians, and my brother had won a Presbyterian scholarship. So I wrote to this professor and asked him if he could find me a place for my daughter to work and go to school. And he said, why, sure, we would welcome her in our own home. The professor and his wife, they were both doctors in their own right. She was professor of child psychology, and he's a professor of Latin American history. And they had three little children, so they needed someone there to help with the work. So by law, they just required them to work so many hours, and they have to release them to do their homework. And she did very well. They're such a fine family. And I sent her to Worcester. And so she received her board and room there with the Ellsworth. And then she, of course, her scholarship helped with the tuition. As long as she kept her grades up, the scholarship continued. But they only had the educational studies then. She was interested in nutrition. So then she transferred to Minnesota, and she received a degree there in Minnesota. And then from there she took her internship at Stanford, so she's a clinical dietitian now.
You must be very proud of all of
her. Then one boy is in Dakota, the Air Force base. He's in the Air Force. The oldest boy, Frank, is a realtor. So the two older boys worked, and they helped support the family. So as time went on, life became easier and easier for me.
Okay, I'm going to turn this off.